Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Seeking Justice Show on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Denny Griffin and my co-host Kim Colton is with us. Kim, good evening.
Good evening, Denny. Before we get into our story tonight and introduce our special guest, I do want to mention that if anyone in our listening office audience wants us to profile a case, they can email us. They can email Denny at Griff, G-R-I-F-F, 1945 at hotmail.com, or myself at Kim at crimeandmystery.com. And if you want to be part of the show, you can call in during the show at 646-478-0982. There, I'm done.
Thank you. And we have a caller on the line already. I'll get to the caller in just a minute here. But first, I want to introduce tonight's program. Tonight, we're profiling the case of Joshua Robinson. And Joshua Robinson, age 20, was found dead with a swing chain around his neck in Amsler Park in McGregor, Texas, at 5:15 a.m. on February 16, 2006. And the police immediately ruled his death a suicide. And information and an examination of the evidence since that ruling has led to a lot of questions about what actually happened that night. And to go over the events and that evidence and the reasons for concern, we're pleased to be joined by Joshua's mother, Cynthia Robinson. Cynthia.
Hi, how are you doing?
Thank you for being with us tonight.
You're so welcome.
And hello, Cynthia. This is Kim.
Hi, Kim.
Hi.
Would you, we'll get to the phones here in a bit. I'd like you first, though, before we do that, before we take any calls, would you please take us back, Cynthia, to that night, or maybe even the day before? There had been, a few days before, there had been some things happened in Joshua's life and so forth, and then would you take us through those events leading
sure,
up to that
sure.
night, and then what happened that night?
Okay, well, Joshua was seeing this girl. They'd been dating for 2 years, and he had been buying Valentine's Day gifts for the prior 2 weeks before that. Got all excited about being able to give this girl a lovely Valentine gift, by the way. And then he found out that her aunt had come to town from Virginia, who sort of kind of ran the show of the family. Because I don't know the reasons. I don't know all those reasons. But he was not allowed to give his gifts to her personally. He had to give them to her, to the aunt, to give to Kayla. So that kind of upset him a little bit. And then, for whatever reason, she came to my house the day prior to his death and wanted to know where he was. And, you know, he wasn't 20. He was 19. He was 16 days away from his 20th birthday. And I said, I don't know where he's at. Why? And she said that she thought that it'd be best if they not see each other anymore. And she was going to put him in jail for statutory rape and blah, blah, blah. And I stood up and I'm very, very protective of my children. I said, look, first of all, you don't walk into my house and threaten my children. Second, it doesn't really matter what you think. The grandparents, the legal guardians, don't have a problem with Kayla seeing my son. So what is your problem? Well, he's been staying over at the house. I said, now, wait a minute. Let's back it up here. He stayed at Grandma's house when Grandma was in jail to take care of Grandpa, and it seemed okay then. Well, I don't want him staying over there. I said, okay, fine, whatever. Well, Joshua came home, and he got mad at me because he thought I had started – he thought I had started things with the family. And I told him, no, it was Aunt Mary who started it all. And he was angry, and he left. He came back about an hour later, and I said, well, what happened? He said, I talked to Aunt Mary, and everything's cool. I said, well, what did y'all say? It's none of your business. I said, well, Joshua, it is my business because she brought it into my home. It doesn't matter. You're not going to find out. It's none of your business. So I let it alone because I knew I wasn't going to get anywhere with Joshua. Everything was cool. 3 hours later, he shows up, and he's hot. He is mad. because of me, he can no longer see Kayla and going off and being really angry. And I told him, look, Joshua, give me 5 minutes. Just give me 5 minutes. I'll tell you everything that happened today, and you'll feel a lot better about it. No, I don't want to talk to you. I don't want to talk to my brother. Matter of fact, I don't no longer have a family. And he left. Well, I didn't think anything of it because this is not our first argument. It's probably our 5,000th argument, okay? So he left, and I knew he was going to go to the park. So I just sat. I just waited on him. And I waited, and I waited. About 3 o'clock in the morning, I realized he wasn't coming home. But I figured he'd found a friend to stay with. And I really tried not to worry because, you know, he's almost 20. But in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, where could he be? Where could he be? And at 6:29 a.m., Mr. Holt's son, Mr. Bill Holt's son, Justin, a friend of my other son, Michael, called our home. And he said, he told Michael that someone was hanging in the park. Well, Michael came and told me, and my mind just refused to wrap around that because obviously it had to be my son. He's the only one missing around. So I told him to run down to the park, which was one block away from our house. I said, see what's going on and come right back and tell me. Well, I tried to follow him down there, and I'm just too old for that. So I went back to the house, and I don't know, maybe reality started hitting my brain, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, not my baby. Next thing I know, I see a McGregor patrol car pull up, and they walk up to me, and I said, please don't tell me what you're going to tell me. And he said, I'm sorry, ma'am. And I don't know much from that point on. I don't really know, but he didn't say anything more to me. That's all they said to me, the McGregor Police Department. And then all of a sudden, my family friends started showing up. The police department showed up. I started hollering. I wanted my other son. Go get him wherever he's at. Bring him home. Well, they brought Michael home. McGregor has 2 ambulances, okay? They brought 2 ambulances in front of my house, and they let my younger son, Michael, get out of one. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, they got one dead son in one and one alive son in the other. But the police were standing in the circle laughing and joking and socializing almost. While I'm over on the other side of the lawn getting my vitals taken, they're instructing me I need to go to the ER because I'm on the verge of a heart attack. They're asking me who was the last person to see him alive. Well, I thought at that time it was me. I said, I guess it's me. Well, what did y'all say? And I told them that we'd argued again. You know, the McGregor Police Department are very aware that Joshua and I had a lot of arguments. But they're also very aware of my 2 sons, especially Joshua. He's not a stranger to the law. He's also not a stranger to the police harassing him. So as I don't think anything was done that morning. I don't really remember a whole lot. They didn't ask me a lot of questions. I do know that I was not taken to that park to positively identify my son. So from that morning until he came back from autopsy on Saturday afternoon, I did not sleep because my baby wasn't home. And I finally talked to Michael about it Thursday night, that same night he died. I told him, you need to tell me what you saw down there. He said, Mama, you're not ready to know what I saw. I said, Michael, I have to know. Well, he told me a little bit. He didn't want to tear me apart. He said, when I got there, Josh was laying on the ground, and I went into shock. He said, they stopped me about 50 yards away from him because I was screaming, no. And I threw up, Mama. That cop said, don't throw up on my shoes. And they put me in the ambulance. And Detective Martin was talking to me. He said, he came over and he said, I'm sorry for what happened to your brother. And I thought, what a weird thing to say. I would think, I'm sorry for what happened. I don't know. I think maybe I've overanalyzed the situation. Anyway, so he asked Michael to get out of the ambulance and identify his own brother. Well, I guess Michael decided he was going to be big, bad brother, and he did that. And the next thing I know, it came out in the paper the next morning of the Waco Tribune Herald, 19-year-old McGregor man found dead in Amsler Park. And I got really upset because had Michael not told me anything the night before, that would have been a shock to me to find out what they had written in there because the Justice of the Peace said there was no foul play, but he wasn't sure if this was self-inflicted. And I called him. I said, you can't have it both ways. And he said, that's why I sent him to autopsy. So it said in the paper that McGregor PD was investigating. So I gave it a few days, and I waited till after Josh's funeral, which I scheduled it and paid for a police escort to show up to escort the funeral procession, and nobody arrived. So on the 22nd, 2 days after his funeral, I called the then interim chief, Chris Molina, and I said, how come nobody showed up to escort the procession? He said, we were unavailable. I said, that's not true, Molina, because we almost collided with a patrol car en route. And I said, my son did not kill himself. He said, well, there's no footprints in the gravel. I said, how would you know if there's five or six kids playing down there? He said, well, it would take two people to get him up there. And I'm thinking, well, at this point, I didn't know how he died anyway. I just assumed he'd climbed to the top of the swing set bar, wrapped the chain, and jumped. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, he said, at 10 after 1, there was nobody in the park. And I thought, what? It didn't occur to me at that time to wonder where that came from. And the reason I called was to find out how the investigation was going. He said, we don't begin an investigation until something suspicious is found. And I thought, what? You investigate every death as a homicide until proven otherwise. Anybody knows that. So time went on, and then McGregor got a new chief of police in May of 2006. Well, I made an appointment for May 2nd, and I went in there and told him my theory that my son is not going to take his own life. And then I found out in the interim that a patrol officer had seen Joshua in the park at 1 a.m. And there is a curfew in that park for 10 p.m. for everyone. So I don't know, did they recognize him? They said they saw him. He was not yet hanging in the chain. Did they confront him and say, would you please vacate the park? Or did they attempt to arrest him and a confrontation took place? I don't know, because I can't even find out the name of the officer. They won't tell me that. Anyway, I told the new chief what I thought, and he said, let's wait on the autopsy, which hadn't come back yet. So when I got that, there was no etiological specific disease or injury to attribute to Joshua's death. There was, you know, there was tardu spots on the anterior surface of the thighs, and it took me a while to learn what those were, which are, you know, deep ruptures of the blood vessels from trauma or injury. But if you're in the chain and on your knees, or almost on your knees, depending on which report you read, there's nothing coming in contact with those thighs. So where did they come from? And then there's red-purple parenchyma with pulmonary edema, which is a color of the lungs. That's all it is, and a little swelling or whatever. But and it said suicide slash hanging. And I'm thinking, well, there's no damage to the neck soft tissues. There's no hyoid bone broken. There's no carotid or jugular occlusion. There's no petechial hemorrhage. Only the bruising on the neck from the evidence of the chain. And then when I was at the funeral service, I noticed that his left hand, his fingertips were bruised, and the inside of his right wrist was bruised, and I didn't know what that from. And as I did an internet search on that, it could have been that he attempted to get out of that chain, you know, to get it away from his neck.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, all you had to do was stand up and the chain would have let go, you know, because I tried this. Believe me, I tried this. So time marched on, and I finally got the dispatch logs. I had to use the Freedom of Information Act, several occasions. I asked for the official time of the 911 call, and they told me, I wanted the tape copy also, they told me they had destroyed those documents, but they couldn't tell me why. So I traced down the man that called 911, and I asked him, I said, what time did you call 911? He said, why didn't you read my police report? I said, they told me they didn't have one. He said, I called 911 at 5:15. And I'm thinking, well, then why did it take 20 minutes to dispatch anybody to Amsler Park? Because they dispatched at 5:35, arriving 1 minute later. And I called the chief again about that. He said the clocks weren't synchronized, or the man had to go home and use his home phone. He lived across the street. That didn't fly for me. So then I found out that although he'd been seen at 1 a.m. and they recognized him in the dark park, not any of the officers who knew Joshua very well recognized him on scene. And only 8 minutes after arriving on scene, Former Officer Norris ran a wants and warrants check on Joshua with no identification or no suicide note. So I asked the chief of police, how is that possible? Of course, it took him 7 months to give me an answer on that, and he said it's not like the officers have driver's license numbers in their heads. A wants and warrants check is done in case there's a warrant. It could be dismissed. And I said, who cares? He's dead. And I asked, how is it possible that former Officer Kirby was the first one on the scene because his car was not dispatched to Amsler Park? I never got any more answers from these people. They didn't want to talk to me. They didn't want to discuss this with me. And I told Chief Watkins, I said, you know, I don't know what's going on in McGregor, because at this point I'm still thinking somebody's out there, there's a killer. I said, I don't feel safe here. And he said, well, then maybe you need to move. I said, no, it's your job to serve and to protect the people of McGregor. He said, let me explain to you one more time. I think you need to relocate. Well, I thought, maybe I just take this little subtle threat seriously. I didn't know, you know, so I moved. And I have not left these people alone. Well, and then all of a sudden I decided I was going to contact the Texas Rangers because somebody needed to investigate this death. Because McGregor didn't investigate, they didn't pick up any crime scene evidence. There was a cigarette butt in a crime scene photo. My son would not smoke. So, of course, I asked about that. They said all the officers smoked except one, thus the cigarette butt. No, that's not good enough for me either. There's possible DNA there. Anyway, I forgot where I was at.
Well,
Watkins.
So, well, let me just ask you a couple of questions.
Yes.
Jenny, should we grab that phone?
Yes, let's get to the caller first, then we'll get back.
Okay.
Caller from 254, you're on the air. Go ahead, please. Caller?
They might just be all listening, because none of my family
yeah.
has heard the whole story.
Okay, well, we'll just let them listen then. So, now, let's go, I guess the thing that I wanted to ask you about was you had noticed or there were some bruising on his fingertips.
Left hand.
Bruising on the fingertips of his left hand and on the inside of his right forearm.
Right.
Did that show up in the autopsy?
No. And see, I called Dallas where they have the autopsy done at, and he told me that was fingerprint residue. Well, then I called my friend and funeral director, Mr. Foss, and I asked him about it. He said, I tried to get that off with Comet, and it wouldn't come off. So that tells me that wasn't fingerprint residue. That's bruising.
Did the gentleman at the funeral home, did they think that, did he think it was something on his fingertips? It almost sounds, you'd think that he'd be able to tell if something was bruised or if there was some substance on there.
I don't want to speak for Mr. Foss, but I do believe we had that conversation because he'd known my family, Joshua and Michael, and myself for almost 10 years at this point. And he loved Joshua. And I asked him about that, and he thought it was bruising also, but couldn't explain it, of course.
Right. And nothing was mentioned in the autopsy about it,
nothing.
Which is a shame. Now, the police told you that they interviewed Kayla, Joshua's girlfriend, and Bill Holt.
Okay, let me go trace that back. After I talked to the former interim chief Molina, about two weeks later, the detective and I spoke, and he told me that as of today, the investigation is over. And I said, what investigation? Molina told me there wasn't one. He said, well, I did one on my own. I said, really? I said, who did you speak to? He said, I spoke with the girlfriend, Kayla. I spoke with Mr. Holt, who is a routine jogger of the park. And I spoke with Michael. And I said, really? So I told him, let me call you back, because I wanted to verify whether he did or not. So Kayla and Michael were at my house. And I asked Kayla and Michael, and Kayla said nobody came to talk to her. I called Mr. Holt, and he said not one cop has talked to him. And I talked to Michael, and Michael said, I remember Martin speaking to me down there, but I can't recall the conversation because he was in shock. So I called Martin back, and I told him, I said, you didn't speak to anybody but my son Michael. And he said, well, I found out everything I needed to know from him. I said, really? what did you find out? He said, well, there was a fight between him and Kayla. I said, no, that's not true, because he didn't even get to see Kayla the night before. She was sick, and she went to bed at 6 o'clock. Well, and I said, Detective Martin, my son did not take his own life. He said, if you've got some kind of evidence showing otherwise, you need to bring it forth. And I said, why should I tell you anything? You guys aren't speaking to me. So, of course, you know, that didn't go over well with the McGregor police.
No.
Department.
No. Oh, and of course, the arrival times. I mean, if Officer Kirby, if they said he was the first officer on the scene, but the dispatch logs. Now, were you able to get a hold of the dispatch logs?
Yes, I do have a copy of the dispatch logs. At first, they only gave me when it started, when actually they were dispatched to Amsler Park for, in parentheses, for possible suicide. And I thought, no, I want the whole night, because they said they were too busy to do the hourly park check on the north side. They call that the dirty north side. They do a park check every hour on the hour. They said they were too busy to do that night. So I wanted to see what was causing them to be so busy that they couldn't run through that park, which is about one block. And there was nothing there. And I also noticed... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, it does sound awfully strange.
But I also noticed that Molina, who told me that at 10 after 1 there was nobody in the park, he was not on duty, and there is no indication or note or anything in that dispatch logs that said there was a park check at 1:10 a.m. So I don't know where that statement came from. I went straight to our mayor, who's also an attorney, and I told him I'm not happy with what McGregor didn't do. And, of course, that's when he emailed the chief saying, we need to tell this woman something because she's digging.
Mm-hmm.
And they just kind of blew me off, so to speak. And then I went to the city manager, and I asked him plenty of times, please remove the swing that Joshua died in. No, no, no. Well, the same let me tell you, I got the statements of the detective and the sergeant, the former detective and sergeant, soon after the death, but I didn't know proper police protocol at the time. I didn't know that the on-duty officers were supposed to make the first report. I did not receive their statement until after April 24th, and they had not been generated until April 24th. And they were like carbon copies of each other. You could have just omitted a word there and added a word here, and they would have been carbon copies. Except the detective and the sergeant said that they unwrapped the chain from around Joshua's neck, and the on-duty officers said that they'd cut him down. That's a very big difference for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, from what I've learned about forensics, if that chain is not necessary to take off, leave it.
Mm-hmm.
Leave all the evidence you can in place. Anyway, I talked to the Texas Rangers, Steve Foster, Company F in Waco, and I asked him to investigate my son's death, and I told him why. He denied me and denied me and denied me, and the next thing you know, he's chief of police in McGregor. And I'm thinking, this is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to explain to him that the former chief told me that I needed to leave town. He said, that's just ludicrous. I said, what? So you don't believe a thing I'm telling you. Oh, so your son wasn't a drug dealer, is that what you're saying? I said, look, I don't know what my son was into, but apparently he wasn't doing drugs because toxicology came back negative for drugs and alcohol. Oh, if I talked to about 30 of his friends, they'd all tell me the same thing. I said, I don't know what his friends would tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I want something done. I have tried to get a internal affairs investigation. I was denied. I asked for an equivocal death investigation. I was denied. I asked for a formal inquest per the Texas Code of Criminal Procedures. I was denied not once, but twice by the JP, who actually wanted to charge me with harassment because I kept asking too many questions.
Do you have a copy of the autopsy report?
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
So it doesn't say that his hyoid bone was fractured and there was
no, nothing.
Okay.
No. It goes, I can read every system off.
That's so weird that wouldn't be in there if, I mean, I'm not a forensic pathologist, but it just seems odd. What do you think, Denny? Doesn't that sound odd to you that there wouldn't be any petechiae hemorrhaging or a hyoid bone wouldn't have been fractured? Something?
A hyoid bone doesn't usually break because they're so pliable before 30. So that part didn't really surprise me so much. What surprised me a lot was in the statements of the officers, they said there were blood spots that weren't abnormal. And I'm thinking he didn't bleed, so what are they talking about?
Right. Were there any drag marks? I noticed
yes.
in that what you had. Okay.
I didn't.
Because you had said that
his
there were drag
that
marks.
His boots that he had on, which were Army probably issued black boots, had drag
mm-hmm.
marks from the toes all the way up to the tongue. And I'm thinking, well, that's weird. And I kept
mm-hmm.
those, and I took pictures of those, and I kept telling everybody, how would you have possibly got these drag marks? And then there was some kind of white fluid on the shirt. But when Mr. Foss, the funeral director, brought me the clothes back, in my mind, I'm thinking, Josh is going to need these clothes. Let's wash them. Hurry, got to wash them. I wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
Excuse me. There are a few things that I find a little puzzling. The lack of damage to the neck other than the bruising, but no other damage apparently. And the thing about the bruising on the fingertips on the left hand, that not being detected during the autopsy, I find a little bothersome. Yet the funeral director said he tried to remove it with Comet, thinking it was possibly a fingerprint or dust residue, and he couldn't get it off. So, I mean, there are a few things here that have me somewhat. And then the other things are the dispatcher times, who was first on the scene, and yet the person who said they were first wasn't dispatched until later. And there's just a whole bunch of things here. You know, maybe there is some logical explanation, but
I
haven't
Holt.
Heard it yet.
Mr. Holt is the routine jogger that goes in the park every morning, and he came to my house 2 days after Joshua died, or after his funeral, and he told me he can extend his condolences to me. And then he told me, he said, I left my house. I don't know if you could visualize. We're not in city blocks. This is like a rural little town. I left my house, and I ran west down Red Oak, which is the address the park is on. So he lived right on the top of the hill of the park. He could see the park from his home. I ran west down Red Oak, and I turned left towards the AMA hall. And as I cleared the house on the corner, I saw flashing lights, spotlights, and two police cars in the park. But it didn't alarm him. He said as he worked his way around, which is probably a three-quarters of a mile, he said, I got close to the swing set, and I thought it was my son that I was seeing. So I took off. I ran home, and I woke my son up, who is Justin, and explained to him what was going on and why he called your house, I don't know. But he said, I did return to the crime scene and asked him why they didn't stop me as I ran away. And he said they told him, because we know who you are, Mr. Holt. Like he would be an impossible predator, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, Cynthia, that when you talked to the chief, or I guess the chief at the time, he said they didn't do any investigation, or they wouldn't unless there was something suspicious.
Right, right. They didn't even bother to ask me, the mother, if Josh might have been depressed or on antidepressants or had made suicidal gestures, had something happened in his life that stressed him out. Nothing, nothing. They didn't speak to me till I made the effort.
So their decision that they, now the decision was made by the police prior to the autopsy that it was a suicide?
I don't know how that was made because, like I said, they didn't speak to me. This is what I found out after the fact. I'm assuming they surmised it was a suicide since they didn't investigate. I spoke with Dr. Reed Quentin, the medical examiner, in August of 2007 because I couldn't understand a lot of what the autopsy was saying, even though I studied the medical terminology. He said I initially ruled undetermined in that death, but until receiving a report from Detective Martin causing me to change the ruling to suicide. I said, well, I need to see that report. He said, you can't. I said, okay, whatever. I will, because Freedom of Information. He also said there was no evidence of strangulation, and I'm thinking, oh, okay. So I asked for the report, and I got a copy of it. Per Martin's report, it says reportedly Josh was a drug user. Joshua and mother had fought the previous night, an apparent suicide by chain versus Nick. It also says 911 was called at 5:41 a.m. Well, that's apparently all a lie, because we all know that 911 was called at 5:15.
A bunch of inconsistencies, huh?
Yes, and so, of course, I sent the whole file to Dr. Quentin and Dr. Jeffrey Bernard to give him some kind of insight. You need to read this, look at the pictures, and maybe it'll change your mind of what your ruling is. Within 3 days, I had the file back. I knew they had ignored my thing. So I called Dallas in December of 07. I spoke with Natasha Kennedy, a death investigator, and I explained who I was and what I was calling about. And she told me, well, we were discussing this case up here also. We think there's something wrong, but we don't have the power to go over the doctor's head. And I told her, well, somebody's got to have the power. Everybody's got a boss. But nothing will give. And I have emailed Dr. Quentin. I have talked to people up at Dallas. Nobody wants to acknowledge me.
Was there anyone who might have wanted to harm Joshua?
I've already been that route, too. No. I've already been all over that map. No.
And Kayla's brother was his best friend, so...
Kayla's brother, Cody, was his best friend. And, of course, you know, there was an uncle, you know. The Caceres, their last name was Caceres, and they kind of ran McGregor 25 years ago, but just like I told Aunt Mary in my home, you know, you might have run McGregor 25 years ago, but you ain't running nothing no more.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, I'm not intimidated by a lot of people, and she didn't intimidate me that day.
One of the questions we have in the chat room is, did Joshua have physical run-ins with the police before? We know he had run-ins.
Yes. Every time that they would come to Joshua, I think after the first time, because Joshua would get very angry real quick, he had a short fuse. Every time the police would come to Joshua, they would cuff him first before they asked him anything. I do know a month before his death, they stopped him in his Cadillac, pulled him out of the car, cuffed him and threw him up against the police car, questioned him for whatever reason and let him go. That's all I know. They would, you know, when his car wasn't running, he'd be walking down the streets of McGregor, or if he's in the middle of the street, they'd stop him and harass him. What are you walking in the middle of the street for? And, you know, Joshua came home one time, and he said, Mama, you need to call your lawyer, because I am so tired of being harassed by these people. And I thought, you know, he's outspoken like his mother, and I told him, treat him with respect, and they'll give you respect back. He said, no, it ain't like that. He said, they stopped me for nothing. And I thought, well, maybe I need to take a better look at this situation. But by then it was too late.
Cynthia, now, so you couldn't, in your investigation since the death, you haven't come up with anybody who you think intended or wanted to harm Joshua.
But
you don't think it was suicide. What do you think happened?
I think that when they saw him at 1 a.m. in the morning in the park, being that there was a curfew, and there was animosity between Joshua and the police anyway, I think they either asked him to leave and he wasn't quite ready to. I think a confrontation took place and it got out of hand and it got too far, and they placed him in the chain to look like a suicide. I think this is a staged suicide. That's what I think.
Staged by the police?
Yes. And I thought about the motive and the means and opportunity. You know, you've got to have the three elements of a crime, and the police are the only ones that had the motive, the means, and the opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Because there was someone who did, you found out, although they said they did not make a routine check of the park. But yet you did learn that at 1 o'clock in the morning, or 1:10, I think it was, somebody
at 1 a.m. There was a report included from Martin's report that I got from Dallas saying Joshua was seen at 1 a.m. in the park by a patrol officer not yet hanging in the chain. But when I asked the chief of police which officer that was, he didn't have any clue to what I was talking about. He knew nothing about it. so he said.
Okay, and another question we have, this is a good question. Out of the police in the town that would stop him and, I guess you could say, harass him, was there a particular officer that had a grudge against Joshua that maybe, I'm thinking one particular where he really, you know,
Officer Kirby
didn't
not like Joshua at all. Officer Walter Kirby, he was an older man. They just could not see eye to eye, and maybe he got that big cop macho thing going on, you know, I'm running the world, I don't like what you're doing, so I'm going to mess with you. Yeah, I've heard about it from a lot of people since then. But I didn't know the police force before my son died. I was never involved with the police, only my children were. I did know that the new chief told me that the detective only became a detective a few days before Joshua's death. And I told him, no, that's not true, because I'd been living there 7 years at the time of Joshua's death, and I had known at least 2 years that Martin was Detective Martin to everybody. He told me that, well, your son was going to get arrested for statutory rape of a 12-year-old, and she was pregnant when he died. I said, maybe you need to take a bit of a closer look at the report, because she was 15, almost 16, and she was not pregnant when he died. I have been all the way up the ladder and back.
Are you satisfied, Cynthia, that you've had through the Freedom of Information Act, you've obtained all the reports?
Oh no, I can't get the time, the official time of the 911 call, nor a taped copy, because they said they destroyed those documents. I want to know why, and of course I went straight to Austin with it, and they told me, well, if they don't have them, what do you want us to do? They can't make them over. I just feel like there's been nobody out there to stand up for the justice here. There's got to be somebody that really cares about justice.
Have you tried working through a lawyer at all or consulting a lawyer?
I've contacted at least 50, if not more, attorneys, and they all tell me I had a meritorious case, but they don't want to touch it. And I finally asked, you know, the last few, why is that? Although, I did talk to an attorney out of Waco, and I probably shouldn't give his name, who grew up in McGregor, and he does believe my theory. He believes it totally. He said, but the first thing we got to do is get that ruling changed, and that's almost an impossibility.
Which ruling?
The suicide ruling. Yeah, I was going to go challenge the medical examiner, but I don't have a medical background, so I felt a little intimidated by that.
Did these lawyers, any of them, give you a good reason for not wanting to get involved?
Yeah, they told me that a lot of times what will happen, regardless of if they're from Dallas or Houston or San Antonio, this police department will put a bug in that police department, and they will be harassed by them. They actually go to jail to be intimidated to back off cases like that.
How big a department is McGregor's police?
They had 8 officers at the time of my son's death. 8.
That included the detective division or whatever?
That included all of them.
8 officers?
Yes. I don't know how many they have now, but there was 8 at the time of my son's death. There was 4 on scene, including the interim chief. I never got a statement from the interim chief. I didn't know that I was supposed to. At this point, I... Go ahead.
Another question from the chat room. Were there any defensive wounds or signs of a struggle? I mean,
yeah,
other than the bruising from the chain and some bruising on the fingertips, was there anything else?
I can't know that. There's nothing in the autopsy, but then there's nothing in the autopsy about the bruising on the fingertips or the right forearm. But I can't get the autopsy photos because there's a new state law that says you have to have a court order to get them. And I can't get a court order until I'm in the middle of a lawsuit. And I can't get the lawsuit started until I know there's some big evidence to go after. So it's like between a rock
crazy.
And a hard place.
Right. That's just crazy. Have you spoken to Kayla or Bill Holt since then? Have you maybe spoken to them as of recent?
No, but the new chief, Steve Foster, said I did go back and talk to Mr. Holt and Mr. Can you remember the guy that called 911 now? Thornton, Mr. Thornton, and they're very vague on what they can remember Well, of course they are. They have to live in your little town called McGregor.
Mm-hmm.
And now I've talked to Kayla on several occasions after the death. She's moved on finally. She's got a baby of her own now. And she, you know, she'll never forget Josh, just like me, but she's doing okay.
Yeah, that's good. And she hasn't heard any scuttlebutt or anything else in town from her friends or...
No.
Does she have an opinion? Oh, well, she didn't.
She didn't stay in town. She was moved to Houston with her mother because she went kind of haywire after Joshua's death, got a little bit of trouble.
Hmm. And did the department merge? Did the police department merge with the sheriff's department?
No, there was a lot of controversy.
Did that actually happen?
No, there was a lot of controversy about that because, you know, the police department were dropping like flies over there. Everybody was quitting. Nobody wanted to work for McGregor. And so they thought initially they were going to bring McLennan County Sheriff's Department in and make use of their force and take over McGregor. But McGregor's citizens said, no, they don't want that. They're satisfied with the police force they have, da-da-da-da-da. So it stayed in place. Now, what puzzles me is that four of the officers, the detective, the sergeant, the canine officer, and Officer Kirby, resigned 3 months after Joshua's death in June of 2006, all at the same time.
That
also,
is so strange.
The animal control officer, Tim Fisk, had been the animal control officer in McGregor for, I guess, for 100 years, and he also was asked to resign. Now, he told a friend of his that the reason they resigned is because they knew too much. But he's also not in McGregor anymore.
Did these other officers stay in McGregor in some other capacity, or they move out of town?
They moved. I know that one is working for a local suburb out of Waco. One is working for the VA as security, and one is at a high school for security, and one is at Sugar Land by Houston.
What is Sugar Land?
Sugar Land's a suburb of Houston.
Okay.
Yeah. But I was in the laundromat one day in McGregor, and I was doing laundry, and I was noticing this woman in there doing cop uniforms, and I said, oh, your husband's a cop. She said, yeah, Walter Kirby. And I said, oh, really? I said, it's probably best I don't talk to you. And she said, well, did my husband do something to you? I said, not to me, but my son. She said, really, what is that? I said, don't you remember the story about the boy being found dead in Amsler Park? She said, no. I said, your husband didn't tell you anything about that? She said, no, tell me. So I gave her a little brief synopsis of it. I said, you might want to go home and ask your husband about it. Well, I saw her about 2 weeks later in the dollar store, and I said, did you talk to your husband? She said, he won't tell me nothing. I said, now, ain't that odd? Mm-hmm. One day I was driving my son's car. He has a big 84 Cadillac down the streets of McGregor, and I saw Officer Kirby. And I don't know, I guess he thought he'd seen a ghost because his mouth dropped to the ground. His eyes got big. I had a little tickle out of that one.
Yeah, I would say.
And sadly, my son is buried in McGregor, and I'm scared to go there. Because after my son's death, they found reasons to put me in jail.
Get you to be quiet.
Mm-hmm. Well, my lawyer told me it's to ruin my credibility in case I sue them.
Oh, good point.
Mm-hmm.
Good point. Now, there are definitely some strange points on this whole case. It would be difficult. It's difficult for me to believe that somebody can hang themselves that way unless they were absolutely bound and determined, almost, you'd think, because
That's what puzzles me, too, Kim, is because Joshua did leave the house at about 10:45 of that night. I do know from friends he was speaking. He was downtown, which is not big in McGregor. He was at Burger King, and he'd seen a few friends, and he'd told one of his friends that he was going to come by Friday, pick up a new puppy, and they had planned to do the girlfriend's grandparents' anniversary dance that weekend. And if you're gonna be that mad, and that angry, and you've already decided, I'm going to go kill myself, you're going to go do this right now. You're not going to run to town and talk to these people and make plans and then go to the park and say, okay, now it's time. You're not going to do that. When you're in the fit of a suicide rage, you do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take the time 2 hours later. And not only that, according to the officers, his body was cold and stiff to the touch, which means rigor mortis had set in, which takes 3 to 4 hours, depending on the ambiance, the temperature outside. And they saw him at 1 o'clock in the morning. He had to have died shortly after they saw him to get into that mode of stiffness 4.5 hours later. It was 65 degrees. This is Texas.
Mm-hmm.
65 degrees that night.
That's what I was going to ask you, is when the time of death, when the coroner thought the time of death occurred.
There was no time of death on there. They said between 1 o'clock when he was last seen and 5:30 when he was found.
But the 1 o'clock sighting, now that's kind of a mystery too, right? Because they claim they didn't actually do the check of the park that night.
Well, they didn't
have
time to
busy.
Do every hour check.
Oh.
But when they did the 1 o'clock check, they saw him there. They recognized him. There's no lights in this park. None. Unless there's a baseball game going on. There's none in February. So this is a dark park. Joshua had a dark brown T-shirt on with some jeans, and I'm thinking, okay, you can see that good in the dark and recognize him, but you don't know who he is close up at 4.5 hours later?
Mm-hmm.
That didn't make no sense to me. And how do you run a once-and-once check on somebody you say you don't know?
And he had no identification on him,
and
right?
No, I had his driver's license, and there was no suicide note. So I asked that question over and over and over, and it took 7 months to get an answer, and that wasn't an adequate answer, if you ask me.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to know why Sergeant Freeman was called into duty at 4:37 a.m. They couldn't answer that either.
Yeah, and the argument you had wasn't even that big of an argument. I wouldn't even call it
a
fight.
No, we didn't. Joshua and I had a very loving relationship, but a contentious one. We like to argue. We like two fence posts in the field. If we can find something to argue about, we're going to do it. But, you know, the next day it would be over. And,
well,
you know, for 3 weeks I waited for that boy to come back in the house and say, gotcha. You
know? Mm-hmm.
He was my firstborn. We were very close.
Cynthia, I'm a little hung up again on this, them running the check on him, the wants check.
Well, I called Waco to see how long a wants and warrants check takes to go through, give them whatever they gave him. I don't know how they knew what to give him. And they said 3 minutes tops. It takes 3 minutes. And they did this. They got on scene at 5:36 a.m. They ran the wants and warrants check at 5:44. I'm figuring at 5:47 the check came back as Joshua Robinson or however they did it. I don't know. He was pronounced dead at 6:15. And when they removed him from the chain, check this out. When they removed his body from the chain, they pulled the back of his shirt down and saw Robinson tattooed on the upper back. And an officer said, because of the proximity to the Robinson's home, they figured it must be a cousin they had never dealt with.
Well, here's where I'm confused, and maybe somebody in the chat room would have an answer or a suggestion. But they claim that when Joshua was found at 5:15 and when the call came in and they got there at, what, 5:35, 5:34, whatever it was?
5:36.
And that was 1 minute after they were dispatched, right?
Right.
Okay. So they were very handy at that time.
I'd say.
But they didn't recognize him. They're saying they didn't know who it was.
Right. They said they thought he was a Hispanic boy.
Now, I don't know, and again, maybe somebody in the chat room would have something, but my recollection is that if you have no, if you don't know who the person is, if they have no identification, and they are unconscious or deceased, where you can't ask them their name or date of birth, I don't know how they could run a wanton warrants check. I mean, you have to have something to feed into the system. If you have no information, if you don't know who the person is, if you don't have any identification, if they're conscious, you can even ask him perhaps and get the, even if they lied, at least you have something, you know, if they give you a fake name.
I agree with you,
Danny.
I agree with you 100%.
I just don't understand how they could have gotten something back. I don't understand how they could have put something in.
I don't either. But in the dispatch
that's
log, 5:44 a.m., it says 2729 check. And I had to call another department to find out what a 2729 was. That's a wants and wants check. And so that kind of blew my mind. Who did you tell what to? What did you say to these people to get somebody's name back? If you got the name back, how did you know 45 minutes later? Why would you say it's a cousin they had never dealt with when they saw Robinson tattooed on his back? They knew who he was.
Well, sure. Why? What do you think the reason is for that saying that they didn't recognize him at 5:35 or 5:36? What would be the logic? Obviously, they did. If they ran once and Warren's check, they had to know who it was. So I don't understand why they would try to deny that. I'm not sure what they hope to accomplish by that.
Three of the officers said they thought he was Hispanic. And Joshua was a dark-complected boy, but he was not close to Hispanic. And they said his face was fuller than they had realized. I guess they said because of the chain had filled the, you know, made the face look fuller. I think it's just a bunch of propaganda to cover their ass. That's what I think.
It sounds to me, you know, from the various people, the different chiefs and officers you've encountered and so forth, that you've gotten a lot of stories that don't quite hold up or don't quite make sense. You agree with me or am I
misreading? I agree. I also think that because we had so many chiefs in there, that one of them, because of their career, the value of their career, would step in and say, well, let's take a closer look at this. Let's really see. Don't just blow this woman off. Although they think I'm that overly emotional, distraught mother that can't accept the fact that it's suicide. They keep telling me that over and over, and I'm not. All I want is the truth. If it's suicide, that's fine. But if it's not, I want those to pay.
Denny, can you think of a particular reason where they'd want to run a wants and warrants background check on a deceased individual? Wouldn't that just why bother?
Well, you can, if they didn't know, for example, if you found, let's suppose they found someone and found, if they didn't physically know him, personally know him or her, but they had ID. Well, they could run the ID to see if the person had been reported as missing, maybe was wanted for a crime somewhere. I mean, I can understand the logic of doing it. But I don't really,
they
obviously knew him, I'm not, this thing is a little puzzling to me, it's all.
That's a puzzling to me, too, because we're talking about a town of 4,700 people. We're not talking Dallas. You know what I'm saying? Everybody knows everybody in McGregor.
Did they run, now we can't find out, you don't know if they ran anything on him at 1 o'clock. Now, if the police saw him in the park at 1 o'clock, and it was, 3 hours, 4 hours past curfew, or 3 hours past the curfew time, it would almost seem to me that would have been the case where they would have stopped him and said, what are you doing here? You know, it's after curfew. And then perhaps they would, you know, call in to the dispatch center and say, hey, I've got Joshua Robinson here, DOB such and such. There are any wants on him. I could see running the check at that time. He's already, you know, they could say he's in violation of the curfew.
Right.
And is he wanted for anything else by them or any other agency?
I can
understand that. But they apparently, as far as anybody knows, didn't do that at 1:10.
Right.
So that's why I say I'm a little...
That's why I wanted the complete dispatch logs from the time shift when they came on at 7 till they got off at 7. So I could know exactly where they went to that night. How come they thought they were so busy? I wanted to know everything. And, of course, a lot of that was blacked out. A lot of what I guess I didn't need to know was blacked out, other cases.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that's legal to do. But everything that beyond where my son started, they didn't black any of that out except for the part of a driver's license number. And, of course, I didn't know my son's driver's license number. because it's on there. Now, the new chief told me they didn't run the check on Joshua. They ran it on the man that called 911. And I said, well, then why did the other chief give me another answer? You guys need to get your story straight.
What part of the driver's license was where?
It was on the dispatch log. It was, the number was on the dispatch log.
How did they get that?
There's another question, isn't it? I don't know.
If they didn't have his driver's license, how would they have gotten even a partial driver's license number?
Well, you can get it easy enough if they knew the name of the individual.
Oh, sure they knew the name of the individual.
The even if they didn't know his date of birth, the approximate age, they could probably run their checks through that, and if he had a driver's license, they could get it that way. In other words, you run the name, and then you get a hit. Not a hit that he's wanted, but a hit that, yes, this person exists, and you can run a license check from there, and then you could get the driver's license number. I don't know why they would have needed that, but it could be done that way. It could be, in other words, instead of running the driver's license number to get the name, they could have run the name and gotten the driver's license number.
I agree with you, Jay. That's why it's so puzzling to me. You know, they did, obviously they had a name to run, yet they said they didn't know who he was. That tells me that they're covering their ass.
You know, I got to tell you, too, this deal now that they tell you that they ran the guy who called 911.
Is that a normal procedure?
Well, I don't know what's normal for McGregor. I know in most dispatch centers they don't run a wants and warrants check on the reporting person.
Exactly.
You know, somebody calls in and says, I just saw an accident, or there's... Now, they might try to get a name, and, of course, now today you can get the phone numbers are all listed and all that kind of thing. But normally, if you were going to send an officer out to interview the person after you got all the information, then to interview the person as a witness, you might run something then if you had any suspicions on it. But I don't know of an agency. I've been out of the business for a while, but when I was in law enforcement, I didn't know of an agency that routinely ran want and warrants checks on a reporting person.
I agree with you, Denny. More so than that, 45 minutes later, when they took him from the chain, they saw Robinson tattooed on his back and said that because of the proximity to our home, it must be a cousin they had never dealt with. I only got two sons, and McGregor knew that. That's all I've ever had. My family was not from McGregor. My mother was, but that was it. And so that put together, all the details from the statements down to the dispatch logs, the crime scene photos of the cigarette butt, why I take a picture of a cigarette butt that the officer smoked, and why not pick it up if you did take the photo? It could be possible DNA. And why is his left hand in a fist-like position upon death?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Right. Jenny, don't you think, too, that with the police giving her the log but blacking out everything else, why would they even do that? I mean, isn't that how your local reporter gets that for the, we call it a police blotter.
Which is a
newspaper.
McGregor Mirror has a weekly newspaper, and believe me, there's not a whole lot of news to report, but there's always a police report in there. Now, however, Joshua's death was not, there was no police report after Joshua's death, and I went to the McGregor Mirror and asked him why that was, because, you know, this is the biggest news in McGregor for a while. We don't even have a homicide rate, let alone a suicide happening there, and they said that police never gave him a police report for that week. And I thought, well, how odd is that?
Oh, yes, isn't that odd?
The document they claimed that they accidentally destroyed or got destroyed or something, I wonder if that was the only document that ended up missing or ended up destroyed or lost. I wonder if
that's
they had
the only one I know of missing, because I got the statements from the four officers. I've got the dispatch logs. I've got the crime scene photos, and I've got the autopsy, but what I didn't have was Martin's report that he sent to Dallas orally to the former death investigator, which Chief Watkins said he had no clue about. if you've got something that Martin said, then you need to contact Dallas. And I'm thinking, all that, Martin's report should have been included in this file, too. And then when I first called interim chief, I said, why is it, what was I asking? I said, why is it that I don't have the statements of the on-duty officers? He said, well, I don't know. Why? Does it matter? I said, well, it might matter. It might matter down here's the down the road. You never know. I said, you guys are making me highly suspicious of this case because you don't want to work with me. This is my son we're talking about. Of course it matters to me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, soon after I spoke with the Texas Ranger, not only did Molina quit, resign, Watkins did too. Now, he was only brought in a year and a half before, prior to that. And I'm thinking they signed some kind of tenure with these departments. I don't know how police chief work. But the city manager quit. The chief quit. The mayor resigned.
I just wonder how you would get that police log.
I've got the police log, but I'll never get that call if they destroyed the document. Because, you know,
but you've got the police log, but isn't it all blacked out?
Yeah, for the most part, for other people that got arrested that night. The addresses weren't where they went, but a lot of the complaints were.
Well, that's what I mean. I mean, it's like, what happened around 1 o'clock? Well, you don't know because it's blacked out.
I don't know.
Where could you get a copy that isn't blacked out?
I don't know. I spoke with my lawyer about that. She said that's legal to do. They can black out anything they want you don't want you to know. And even at 1 o'clock in the dispatch logs, there was nothing indicated in there that they had done a park check and they saw Joshua. I didn't know about Joshua being cited from the police department. I was speaking to an associate with the Southwestern Institute of Forensic Science in Dallas, and she slipped up. She said, who was the last person to see Joshua alive? She said, oh, never mind. It says right here in this report that Joshua was seen in the park at 1 a.m. And I said, what? She said, oops, I wasn't supposed to tell you that. And I said, it's a little late, isn't it? And I said, who signed that report? She said, there's no signature. So I called the McGregor PD, and I asked him, which officer saw my son? Oh, I can't remember, the chief said. I said, you can't remember. There's only two officers on duty.
Right. We have a question in the chat room here for you, Cynthia.
Go ahead.
She's asking, I'd like to know the extent of the missing documents. How many cases were affected? How did it get destroyed? Was it a leak in a ceiling, or did someone remove it from the file cabinet?
How would I know that? All I know, when I filed that FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act form, to get specifically a taped copy of the 911 call because I wanted to hear it. I also wanted to know the official time. It was back to me that those documents had been destroyed.
So you were looking for a tape.
I wanted to hear the call.
Okay.
I wanted to hear the 911 call. And I also wanted to know the official time because there was so much discrepancy through word of mouth that it was called this time, it was called that time. I wanted to know the official time. So I went straight to the source. It took me a long time to track him down because he moved.
How long after the incident did you request the tape of the call?
March of 2006, which was a month. Which is in a time period that is legal. I had 90 days to get all the records I wanted.
Okay. Now, I know, and I'm going back now into the 80s. Okay, I'm going back a ways for this. But I know when the department I used to work for first got out of the dark ages and got into modern dispatch center, it was the first time they had the equipment, they had the taping equipment and so forth, and they would tape everything. But initially, they only had a 30-day supply of tapes. So if at the end of the 30 days, then they'd reuse the tapes. So if a request didn't come in for, you know, somebody needed something for evidentiary purposes, if the request didn't come in for 30 days, until the time had gone by, that tape could then be back in the system and be reused and taped over. Now, what they would do, sometimes somebody called and said, hey, hold that tape out. We don't know yet if we're going to need it, but we might. Normally, they would hold the tape out and take it out of the rotation. So it wouldn't, and then maybe we wouldn't get a court order for you know, 2 months or something. But I know that there were occasions at first when the system was new to everybody that if people were slow on the draw, wanting to put us on notice that they may need a particular call reviewed. If they didn't get it in there within that 30-day period, that tape would be back into the system and be taped over. So that's why I was wondering how long time went by.
I understand what you're asking me. I had to fill out 4 of those. So, you know, my memory, let me see. I got them right here. See, also on, what day would this be? 417, pursuant to the Open Record Act, I am requesting a copy of any and all materials, reports, photos, etc., relating to the death of my son, Joshua David Robinson. So that should have given me everything I wanted anyway,
mm-hmm.
including the 911 call.
Including the log.
Yeah, including everything. But it took till April 28th to get the crime scene photos and the statements of the on-duty officers. And like I said, they were almost carbon copies of each other. And how do you remember details like that, February, March, April, two and a half months later, except to go back and to read the original statements by the detective and the sergeant?
Mm-hmm.
You know, too, again, going back 25 years or so, I don't know what McGregor's policies are, or I don't even know what's going on in my old department today, but it used to be that when you do desk officer duty, one of your responsibilities was to keep the blotter. Okay? The blotter was there at the desk, and what you would do is when a complaint was received, you would log it in, you would put down the name of the complainant, the address, all that kind of stuff, the nature of the call, what it was all about, in addition to a dispatch log. This was separate from the dispatch log.
I do have that report, Denny. All it gives me is the complainant's name and address. That's all it gave me.
Yeah.
Nothing else.
No, my point was that if the redactions on the other documents on the logs were they blacked out, in other words, that blotter would be on the desk and the news people could come in and review that. They could take it and copy everything. You know, they come in with their legal pad and for their blotter article in the newspaper, police blotter, and they would copy everything right out of there. So it was public information. I mean, it wasn't like it was redacted. It was just the name. Everything was in there. It was a public document. Okay, it was open to the public. And so I'm not sure. You know, I can't speak for McGregor or Texas. I don't know. I've never worked there. I've only been through the state a couple of times. But all I can say is where I used to work in New York State, it was a situation where the blotter was out there, and the newsmen would come in. And in fact, one of my duties was acting public information officer, and when the news guys would come in, I'd have to show up at the desk so they could read the blotter and they could ask me questions. If there wasn't sufficient information in the blotter entry, I would have to expand on it or whatever. But
That must be big city stuff, you know, huh?
Well.
Because McGregor is like a rural community.
But I'm surprised. Now, again, now maybe your lawyer, maybe she was right or he was right that they could legally block out or redact this other stuff. I don't know, but I'm just saying it used to be that was all public information. So
that's why I don't. Yeah, I can't understand why you didn't get it.
I don't actually know what I'm supposed to be getting because I'm not understanding the question. I got the dispatch logs, but what they do apparently in McGregor is you got some dispatcher up there keeping logs because they're not doing it. They didn't even do a sketch of the crime scene, which is a normal procedure.
But they didn't consider it a crime scene, right? They didn't do an investigation because they apparently didn't consider it a crime scene. They just said, well, unless you can come up with some evidence that there's something suspicious, there was nothing to investigate.
Yeah.
But see, this is after the fact. This is a week after the fact. They didn't do anything on the, at the crime scene except straighten his legs, they said, which is difficult to do to the stiffening, and body bagging. Within 45 minutes, they had him away so the bus people, the kids in the school bus wouldn't see him. It was like he didn't matter, like a piece of trash. And that's what probably gets me the most.
Did they bring a lot of lights and stuff into now 5:15 or 5:30 in February? It was probably still dark, I would imagine.
Yes, it was. But no, there was no lights, no spotlights, just their car. Just the cars.
The gentleman who called 911, he lived across the street, correct?
He lived directly across the street from Mr. Holt, which was a skip, hop, and a jump to get to the phone. Which
right.
They're trying to tell me that 20-minute delay came in.
Yeah. Did you ever talk to him personally?
Yes, I did. It took me a long time to track him down because he'd had his ass up for sale before Joshua died, and apparently he had sold it in the interim, and I finally tracked him down, and I knocked on his door one night, and I told him who I was and that I was sorry to bother him, and I asked him, what I really need to know from you is when did you actually call 911, and he said, you need to read the police report. I said, they told me you didn't make one. He said, well, I did. I said, well, apparently I'm not going to get it because I've asked for it and asked for it. He said, I called 911 at 5:15, and I said, well, I wonder why it took him 20 minutes to dispatch then. He said, I can't answer that. And then, of course, this new chief told me when he went to talk to him, he said the reason he moved was to get away from you. And I thought, no, he didn't. You don't even know what happened, okay? You weren't here. And apparently you can't read a proper report because you're trying to tell me that Joshua was dating a 12-year-old and was pregnant when he died. You don't even know. Read the report, Chief Foster.
Mm-hmm.
I think somebody's just trying to blow smoke up my ass coming in and going, and I don't think I'll ever get any closure from this from the PD.
So, Cynthia, where do you go from here? I mean, what?
There's nowhere to go, Danny. I don't think. This is the best I can do is get on national radio show and hope that somebody cares enough to. You know, I started writing a book about Joshua, and I've got 256 pages written, but I can't get past the day of his death. I just can't go any further. I've relived it and relived it for 3.5 years, and I think I've tried every avenue I could come up with, including learning forensics, speaking to criminologists, speaking to forensic pathologists, speaking to murder investigators, speaking to ex-police officers, detectives. I even hired a private detective. Nothing.
What did your private detective have to, what did he do and what did he tell you?
She said that she found out that that's where I found out that Joshua had been to Burger King and eaten, that was his last meal, which was around 11 o'clock that night. He was eating all the leftovers when they were closing down. He was talking to some friends about picking up the puppy on Friday, and it seemed, you know, the guy that he talked to told me he was in a great mood. It doesn't seem like to me that you'd go from great mood, getting mad, going into a great mood, and then going back to the park saying, okay, now I'm ready. It's not making any sense to me. I know my son. I know Joshua. He also had a learning disability.
The police didn't follow up on the Burger King piece of it? They didn't interview
the
people who saw him?
They didn't care. Let's just wipe this one under the rug as quickly as we can, make her go away, and it'll all be over with.
It would seem if they were trying to establish his mood and frame of mind prior to his death, they would want to talk to everybody.
You would think that if they were trying to establish his mood, they would have come talk to me, the mother.
Yeah.
They didn't ask me anything. They didn't even speak to me until I went to them.
And the one officer told you that he got every. First, he said he interviewed Kayla and Mr. Holt and so forth, and then and Michael,
uh-huh.
and then when Kayla and Mr. Holt said that they were never spoken with and you questioned them, he said, oh, well, I didn't need to talk to them. I got everything I needed from Michael.
Right, right. That's what he told me. And it, well, I didn't say anything about him lying to me. I just told him, no, you didn't speak to these people. You only spoke to my son. Why didn't somebody come talk to me? I said, you could have got a whole different perspective on this because I was the last person to see Joshua at that time. That's what I thought. We were arguing. We argued all the time, but it wasn't nothing that he was going to go commit suicide over. Joshua would have went down to the park, cooled off, talked to his friends, and came home. And everything would have been cool.
Was he... Was he walking that night, or did he have his car?
No, his car was broke down.
Okay.
So he was walking that night. And McGregor, you can get from the park. The park's a block. Burger King's another block away. It ain't like we got to walk very far.
So he apparently been to Burger King, and then from there must have gone to the park.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If he was there at 1:10.
Well, you have to come through the park to get back our home.
Okay.
Or close by. You don't have to actually go into the park, which, you know, he's going to taunt the law anyway, but you could have walked. You have to see the park to get to our home if you're going to go anywhere in McGregor.
Did the detective, your private detective, learn if he left Burger King with anyone?
No. No. I don't think she did a very adequate job, so I really don't want to stress the investigator's point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, there wasn't any news that he'd left there with anybody in a car or otherwise. And there's a lot of people that walk around McGregor during the night, and nobody came to me and said, I saw Josh at so-and-so at 11:30 or midnight or anything.
Let me ask you this. Maybe I'm just trying to think. Now, you say it's totally dark in the park. Unless there's a ball game, there's no lights on.
Right.
And there was no ball game in February.
Right.
So, after leaving Burger, I mean, I'm just trying to think.
Now, there would have been lights on the street back from Burger King. There would have been lights because that's a highway. But
right.
After you leave the highway coming towards our home, it's dark. It's all dark.
I'm just trying to think of what anybody would do alone. I mean, I could see if you were with a couple of buddies, maybe sit in the park and shoot the breeze.
Josh went through
a lot.
Josh went through a lot. We lived a block away. They played basketball down there. There's a swimming pool attached to the park. That's where he went to work things out.
Okay, so you don't think it's odd that he would have gone in there alone?
Oh, no, not at all.
Okay.
No. I don't know where I'll go from here on out. I just know that he didn't kill himself. I do know that. Josh didn't have that. He didn't have that kind of... He had more zest for life for that. I mean, he had a wonderful relationship with Kayla going on. They had planned to get married someday. No. And I talked to his brother about it after about a two-year hiatus, the way he wouldn't speak to me at all about his brother. I asked him, do you think that your brother committed suicide? He said, Mama, I've thought about that, and I've thought about that. No, I just don't think he would have. He was just too tough for that.
This sounds eerily familiar to a case we did a couple of weeks ago from Nevada with Ricky Dyer. I mean, remember, that was also the police almost immediately classified that or said it was a suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And there was all this or a substantial amount of evidence indicating that it may not have been a suicide. And the police agency there would never explain the inconsistencies and come up with any logical explanations for these questions. And Cynthia's going through almost an identical thing, that the police agency involved won't offer any reasonable, you can offer explanations, but it's nice to get an explanation that has some logic to it.
Exactly.
Where you can say, well, okay, we disagree on it, but I can understand where you're coming from.
Exactly.
But,
if you would just answer my questions, give me a straight, it's like I told the chief, I said, look, I'm a tell it like it is person, just tell me like it is. If you don't have nothing to hide, tell it like it is. Mm-hmm. Well, I think you need to leave my office because I'm done talking to you. And I thought, okay, you can't push these people. You just can't.
Like you run into these catch-22s. Like, you're in a catch-22 now.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
That one lawyer told you, well, if we can get the cause of death or manner of death changed on the death certificate, maybe we can do something. But you need evidence to get that. So, I mean, what came first, the chicken or the egg? You got to have one before you can do the other, and you can't get the first one, so that means you're never going to get the second one.
What I understand, Danny, I've been looking up how is a ruling made.
Mm-hmm.
And a ruling is made by an autopsy. An autopsy means by what you see. But it also relies on the investigative findings. There's no investigation. There's no investigative findings.
Right.
So you're only ruling then on what you see in that body. And what he saw in that body does not lead me to believe anything other than certainly not suicide, because there was no etiological specific disease or injury. He didn't say asphyxia. He didn't say ligature strangulation. He didn't give any cause of death such as a heart attack. It was just, you know, the tardu spots and the red-purple parenchyma. Parenchyma means it's the outside lining of an organ. The reddish-purple is just a color. So why is that? Why did they do did they put a knee in his back? Because once you put a knee in somebody's back, their diaphragm stops moving. If the diaphragm stops moving, the lungs can't breathe. Did he struggle? I don't know, because I can't get the autopsy photos to see. I don't know if there was bruising on his body. I can't see Joshua just taking it like that, because he's a fighter. But, you know, I'm at a loss.
The fact that he was a fighter, to me, casts even more doubt on the suicide aspect. Because
exactly.
He would want to fight the problems rather than giving up.
Right. There was a pond. Oh, I don't know distance very much. A pond within maybe 35 feet of him behind the swing set. What I'm wondering is, did they try to drown him? All you got to do is put the nose and the mouth in the water, and they do what they call it laryngeal spasm, where the throat closes down. There's no water coming in, but their automatic reaction is to breathe because they're going out of their minds trying to breathe. And it can also cause cardiac arrest if the water's under 70 degrees. So I don't know. Where did the tardu spots come from? Did the police car hit him? Because that's about the right height where they were. I can't even get the dimension, the size of the tardu spots from Dr. Quentin. He won't tell me. Where were they located? The top of the thigh, bottom of the thigh, mid-thigh? How big were they? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And if there was no contact with the thighs on anything, with his knees almost touching the ground or touching the ground, which report you read, what contacted those thighs to cause the tardu spots? They said that was a pooling of liver mortis. No, it would have went down to the most bottom point, which would be in the knees. If he couldn't go no further because his legs were bent.
So it was his inner? It was his
anterior.
Inner thigh?
No, it's anterior, is the top of your thigh at the front.
Okay.
And they also said he leaned into the chain. That photo that you guys have online does not show a lean in the chain.
No.
So, you know, they said parallel in my mind. So did he have a cadaveric spasm? I don't know. And I may never know. But I'm fixing to lose y'all because my phone's beeping.
Okay.
So.
Do you need to? It's beeping because your battery's running out?
Yeah, and I don't have another phone in the house. So.
Oh, okay. Well, we will wrap it up here then, Denny. Is that okay with you?
Yeah. Cynthia, thanks a lot. And if we, I'll keep you in the loop on future progress. We're getting some other guests on. We're calling them special editions, where we're having different professionals on, and we're going to have a prosecutor on.
That'd be great.
On the 13th.
Okay.
And hopefully we can ask him some questions on the legal aspects of, you know, trying to get information and this type of thing. So We'll certainly keep you in the loop on that. And thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Yes, thank you, Cynthia. Oh, she left. I think she's gone.
I think we lost her.
I do, too. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening tonight. And if anyone, if anybody wants us to review their case or to profile it, please email us at griff1945@hotmail.com or kim@crimeandmystery.com. And I guess that's it for tonight. Thank you so much for everybody, and thank you, Denny.
Good night, Kim. Good night, everybody.
Good night. Bye-bye. Good night.